Yes, a little Church in there by Jimmy McGriff and Hank Crawford on alto sax with Rivers Invitation, a tune I also like by Stanley Turrentine. This is from their album 1987, would you believe? The Best of Hank Crawford and Jimmy McGriff. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And frankly, you know, I could use a happy pill. Just so much is happening. And it isn't the greatest news. It, you know, we're all on edge and we're being drawn ever closer to the edge by issues that are happening and events that are happening in our collective lives. And it's good to sit around and ponder these things. What are we supposed to do about what is unfolding before our very eyes? We know that there's another hurricane developing in the Caribbean. And it is said by the weathercasters that they expect it also to develop into a pretty significant hurricane. Like, we need more. And there's still two more behind that. So we have to watch out for that and just keep praying in our hearts that folks can withstand this battering that they've been getting. And I walked around the neighborhood on Saturday, and I couldn't believe my eyes because, of course, I hadn't been out the week before because of the hurricane and so forth. You stay close to home. But as I walked around, the damage here was quite significant, but not at all really threatening to life and limb. It tore trees apart. There are many trees here. And you saw the carcasses of all these trees lining the streets waiting. There's a special truck that comes by to pick up that kind of garbage. And I imagine soon they should be on top of that. But both sides of the streets were just littered with these mounds and mounds of dead trees. And I said again to myself, boy, was this town lucky not to have had, you know, the kind of impact that others had. It's only a matter of cleaning up some trees and putting things back together again cosmetically. There was some damage that I could see all in the neighborhood of, you know, loose slats and things like that. But compared to what other people have been through, we got away. We got away. And for that, I'm thankful. Very much so. So I saw it for the first time. And it really jarred me back to my senses, saying, you know, in life you have to be grateful for the little things. Of course, I this was a big thing because I couldn't believe it when I saw it. All these trees. And but people still cleaning and putting themselves together, putting their homes together, and seeing to the repairs that are necessary and so forth. And that was a good balance for seeing the dead trees out there on the side of the road and people still moving ahead, trying to get their repairs done in a timely fashion. But it is not good news to hear that yet another hurricane, Hurricane Maria, is getting ready to give the Caribbean yet another wallop. People just can't take too much more of this. And I still see on the maps smaller hurricanes looking like they're developing. and coming right behind that. So it's been a very brisk season so far. Your president is at the United Nations today, no doubt causing a great ruckus because, as usual, chaos is his signature trait. So we will learn later on what it is he has said in the world, facing the world community of nations, with everybody interested in a war. Most everybody that we identify as the troublemakers in the world, what do they want? They want war. Israel wants war with Iraq. The United States is, clamoring for war. But of course, their sons and their children are not going to be fighting. No, they'll be hunkered down in their mansions and safe from harm. But they're clamoring for war, they're looking for war, and of course they're blaming North Korea. This is not to say North Korea is not largely responsible too for these outlandish things that it has done. It's outrageous conduct in the world theater, this escalation of nuclear threats. No good. Absolutely not good. But on the other hand, the other nations of the world also see some trouble in dealing with President Trump. And increasingly, people are getting fed up with the leader of the United States, who acts like a spoiled brat, a spoiled child. Who is, making quite a ruckus because he can't find his way. He can't get his way. He can't dictate to the world what it ought to do. It's a whole new world. And President Trump experientially has never been prepared to deal with this arrangement where people participate, at least a very important degree in the decisions that eventually are made. He doesn't have time for that. And more, it is troublesome to the world community of nations that the United States, a pivotal member of the world body, cannot be counted on to maintain a level head in all of this. Whatever the president promises is not written in stone. It disappears half hour after he commits to doing something, then something else happens. And you have all these people, these military people, especially this guy McMaster, just they itching for a fight. This is a major problem. For us, that part of the military that is itching for a fight. We have the US ambassador to the United Nations talking like a thug. Remember the very first week she was appointed, she was talking like, let's go in the backyard and I'll slap you silly. I'll take my brass knuckles out of my purse and get busy. I mean, this is not the way we comport ourselves. And we have never comported ourselves like a bunch of thugs in the world community of nations. We don't behave this way. Here's a grown president sending out things to, against Hillary Clinton that are supposed to be funny, but they are the actions of a little boy. An unsteady little boy, an ill-trained little boy. Of course, this is very, not just vexing, but this is scary. It is scary when you have a leader like that on whom you cannot depend for even 10 minutes. Just stay focused for 10 minutes and don't change anything. Don't touch anything. He's the kind of kid that your mother used to think of you as and me. You go to the, you go on a visit somewhere, you find a seat and you sit down until it's time to go. Don't touch anything. Don't move anything. You know, don't pick up anything to look at. Just sit there. But our president is different. And it's about time that this conversation be opened up by clinicians and people who are experts in this field about the impact. This is the part I'm getting to. There is an impact of the president's conduct on the nation's conduct. It is not factored in to the misery that we are experiencing as a nation, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. People are at the peak of their anxiety. They worry about the future. They are afraid that the United States would go to war. They are afraid that things would get to a point where we will be attacked by another unstable force in North Korea, and there will be nuclear war. People are so clear, they've been living with it, that their money isn't going as far as it used to. They worry about their children's education, their college education. They worry about schools that are closing. They worry about their healthcare costs. They worry about paying their bills and paying their rent. People are worried and impacted in a way that I have not seen before. They're very, 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 very worried. I've had people tell me they can't sleep. They can't sleep. The country is in such a state of instability, that they can't sleep, knowing, look whose hands it's in. Congress seems unable to do very much to rein in this outrageous conduct. It's just sitting there and yammering about things that are not really at the top of the list. And then we have these people playing games. There's Hillary Clinton trying to convince the world that she deserves to be president of the United States. She was robbed. And if she has to turn everything upside down to force the argument to arise again, and there is no argument about it, she lost. Go away and, you know, put yourself to good use, and then we'll see down the road. But we know you lost. End of story. And stop annoying people with this invective, you know, the women didn't vote for me because the men in their lives forced them not to vote for me. All these stupid arguments that are actually being entertained by people who said they went to journalism school and they know what a story is and what a legitimate claim is, but won't challenge stupidity like that. So we have a lot of things coming together. And then, of course, we see what is happening. And more it looks like a story. It doesn't look real. It looks like a movie. So that we are torn between watching either the Emmys and who is well-dressed and who is poorly dressed and whatnot, and who won for what. And we turn off the other program where people are getting their heads bashed in. That's not important. That is not something we want to see. And bizarre as it is, in some places, that now is entertainment. Let's watch the cops bash a few heads in. This way, we know that our police forces in whichever towns, that they know how to do their jobs. They know how to arrest people, and they know how to restore order. But let's get back to who won for what. And I put this all together in my head, and it was annoying because wherever I went, there it was, bothering me. Why do we have to live this way? Why is it that this should be our reality, our shared reality? Without much protest or much resistance, it just is what it is. Everybody is okay as long as they get their share of media coverage, as long as they're in front of a mic, as long as they're blabbering but not doing anything. And then in the end, you put it all together and you have to admit, you have to deal with this reality that this is what we have come to. This is the state of affairs in our nation. This is what the people supposedly want. And in any event, we have no say. The worst people in government are the ones who have the say. And all of these problems that have been dogging us as a nation for so long, they're not important. You know what's important? Steve Mnuchin is important, the Secretary of the Treasury. His wife is even more important, his newly wed wife from Scotland or wherever it is she comes from. These people, Mnuchin, is said to have a personal wealth of something in excess of $300 million. But the government exists, you see, to give him free plane rides wherever he wishes to go, him and his wife, just like Trump and his family. Wherever they wish to go, they can hop on a plane. Financed by public tax dollars and essentially run the planes and in their service like a cab, like cab drivers. Pilots become cab drivers. Mnuchin is trying to explain to people that that trip that he and his wife made to Fort Knox to observe the eclipse there had a component of security to it. He did it and he had to be secure because he had to maintain secure communications with Washington at all times. And how are you going to do that on your cell phone? You need the security of the plane, the phones on the plane, the government plane. And just as you come down, you deplane, there may be, for Mrs. Mnuchin, a very silly woman. There may be, what do you know, a photographer right there to take a picture of the newly important Mrs. Mnuchin riding on a plane that costs taxpayers $25,000 an hour. And she was very quick to defend it. She's worth it. This is the mindset that is now pervasive in the upper classes that are ruling this country. They are thieves, but they're a different class of thieves in that although they are thieves, they have the power to rule everybody. And still talk about people who are robbing the government, the welfare queens, and all this kind of language. I want to ask you right now to make arrangements to listen to tomorrow's program. Because you will hear something that you there's no way to believe it. About the kind of theft, the kind of corruption that is going on in this government. And the things that they ought to be paying attention to, they have absolutely no regard for. They couldn't care less about that. These things don't matter to them. And I draw attention again to this issue of police killing, operating literally as death squads in our country, killing people and getting away with it. They can put all kinds of reasons forward. They can do all of that. But I'm telling you that the people who have covered these cases and unearthed the truth of these particular cases and others that we don't even know about, the truth tells us that the police have taken on a method of policing that is no different from Duterte's death squads in the Philippines or the death squads in all parts of the world where you have governments that are out of control. They psychologically give us a reason to discard these people who are killed, to not pay them any mind. And that if we do pay these things any mind, it would be to teach other people a lesson. You see, when you do bad things happen to you. And that is supposed to suffice for a long and growing list of police officers and police departments that harbor these officers who kill people. We just had a judge who will be retiring in December saying, you know what? I find no reason, really, to convict the officer. This goes back a ways. This case had been held over since 2011. And all of the telltale signs are there with this case. The officer opted for a non-jury trial. That's a huge alarm. Obviously, I don't have any proof of this particular fact, but this is what has happened routinely in these kinds of cases, where the Fraternal Order of Police, the police union, and others who are law and order types assist in judge shopping. If you pick this judge, you'll have a pretty good time at it, because this judge is lenient. He sees things our way. Now, this judge, it's said, is a very fair-minded judge. But fair-minded or not, it followed the book. The book is, go for a non-jury trial. Which he did. The police officer is said to have shot Anthony Lamar Smith, 24 years old, and after shooting him and killing him, he was seen supposedly putting a gun in the car, in the vehicle, which would later buttress his claim that he was in fear for his life, you know, that's a phrase, and there, in fact, was the gun. We don't know any of that. And I'm not saying that every case is to turn out against the police. No, I'm saying we have seen way too many cases coming to an end, an unjust end, an unjust determination, but following a script. I've said how many times on this program, I don't even have to know the details of a case anymore. I know how it's going to turn out. And correct me if I'm wrong, I've said it on this program so many times. This is what's going to happen. This is what's going to happen. And this is what's going to happen. And it will result in no conviction. And if it does, then another phase kicks in where the issue is no longer about determining the penalty. It is about encouraging the family to settle. And so said, so done. This is not about justice. So all these thoughts came into my head this weekend. And it led me to ask, I mean, is this how I'm supposed to expect to live in the United States? Where routine things will impede my progress and my life, impact my life. We had 9 people now die in beds, in a nursing facility, a nursing home, for several days staying there unattended, really, and slowly dying of heat during the storm. The preposterous explanation by the owner of the healthcare facility was that he called the governor's office at least once. So he called the governor's office, but all these days went by, and these are elderly people suffering. And the people taking care of them were in no position, it seems, to persuade anybody that these people were due special care. And on top of those who died, there were 115 more literally waiting to die under these conditions. Now, how is that in any way different from a decision that in our society we don't need to worry about these kinds of folks? They're old, they're going to die anyway. How could we possibly as a society accept that? And the only reason they kind of barely kept them alive instead of running out and finding a solution, and there, by the way, there was a hospital directly across the street. Directly across the street. You walk across the street and there's a hospital. Nobody even did that. Have we reached a point as a society where we don't care about these things? These things don't bother us. It's all about me. Me and mine. I, me, and mine. At some point, we will find out, if we haven't already, this is not a good way to live. And no society that countenances this will prosper. We have to tackle these things head on, and we have to be open about it. I know some people are very upset about the protests. And they say, there they go, breaking things again. There they go, causing trouble again. But let's also look at the other side. Imagine if they're doing these things and people still are not listening. Imagine what's next. Armed insurrection by the police and loss of life on a major scale over something that should be discussed in a particular arena, in a particular way, and supposedly we have educated people to solve them. I raise the same question about these storms. And why is it we know Houston is still under mud and grime and water with mosquitoes multiplying like crazy? Why is that? And why is it sufficient simply to say, well, we're doing the best we can? No, that's unacceptable to me. Because you know you're smack in the middle of the storm path. You know that you experience storms every so often, some more dangerous than others. But you know that you can't claim that a storm occurring now is an unusual thing. It's been going on for thousands of years. But why do we still have people displaced? Why do we still have this mess? Why do we still have flooding occurring? All these things are solvable. Why not put money, and several presidents have been able to make that decision but didn't. This is an infrastructure problem. This is an urban planning problem. But you are willing to see this kind of destruction, this level of destruction and inconvenience. And by the way, it is not just about water. It's about people's lives being utterly destroyed. And here we come to the big observation. The common thread is that the people who are suffering the most in Houston, the people who are suffering the most in Miami and in other parts of Florida, you know exactly what I'm going to say. That too has not changed. These are black people and brown people and poor people. No rich person or no wealthy person has had to pick up a placard and find a shelter every night to sleep in. Nobody has had to find out when the next delivery of water will be. Because those people are valuable. Those people are real. We have people at this time, after the hurricanes, still not able to return to their homes or have good, clean water to drink. They can't dress and go to work for the little piece of a job that they had. There is no program that says, look, if you have been really seriously affected by this hurricane, we have emergency measures in place that will get you food stamps, that will get you whatever it is you need. There's going to be a limit on it, but you don't have to be destitute, not in this country. But if you have the wrong color skin, you better prepare psychologically for the long haul. There's no caring about this. And there's no prospect of immediate solution. People are catching hell here. You should see what the migrant farm community looks like. They get no coverage, so nobody knows, and nobody cares, even if they knew. You know, Florida is a huge agricultural state. And somewhere, we ought to be engaged in doing these things that force the country, because it does not intend to do anything like this on its own, to force the country to be human. I think of that 99-year-old woman through all of her life. She still managed to breathe. At least the one thing she managed to do is just breathe for 99 years. She and her family place her in the care of a facility, and she dies. The temperature there was in excess of 100 degrees. And we call ourselves a great advanced nation. And we care about people. These are the questions we have to raise. These are the questions we have to raise. We can't make any claim to any of this. This business about how advanced we are and how humane we are and our support for human rights. So you have a human rights crisis on your hands in your own country. And you're now punishing people who are raising the questions about it. You have tanks in the streets and a militarized police presence just to show you you are not to raise these questions. But you're not being heard in any other venue. And look who's raising the questions. Not the people with all of their highfalutin college degrees. It's the people who are bearing the brunt of the problem. And people sit in their ivory towers and they observe and they comment from the safety, from their own safety zones. And even being derogatory toward people who are at their wits' end because they have no idea what it is to live in certain parts of this country. They have no idea. You're driving down the street. It happened to me. It happened to me once in New York City. My friend was going away for a long vacation. She asked me to water her plants. I said, okay. I was driving down to where I lived, which wasn't far from where she lived. And I said, well, in as much as I am here, I'll just go water her plants. And this way, that is over for a couple of days. And out of nowhere, there's a helicopter hovering above me. There are about a dozen police officers surrounding the car. And they kept saying, don't move, don't move. And I don't know what the heck is going on. But I was watching one officer in particular. He was Asian. And I swear to you, I knew that gun was going to go off. He was on the passenger side of my car and pointing his gun directly at me. And his hand was shaking so badly. I knew that even before he might have shot me, the gun might have gone off on its own because his hand was trembling. It turned out to be a huge issue. But everything kind of calmed down when a black officer saw me and he said, is Miss Lead? I said, yeah. He says, oh, okay, guys. And he said, I said, what is this? They had a report of a stolen car. And you should see all the things that they went through, ostensibly to reclaim this car, which I'm in. And the license plates are different. The color is different. But they had me pinned up there, and I could have been dead that night. But I had to go down to the precinct and produce all kinds of documents to prove that I'm me. They're wrong, totally wrong. And I could have lost my life if that officer, the shaky one, continued to shake the way he was. I could have been dead. I talked to the officer about it. I said, what are the rules about this? Do you think it was right in a situation where you thought there was a stolen car that a police officer will get that close? You see, it's just me. And you're pointing, you're so scared, you're so pumped up. Your hand is, and that's all I was watching, his hand. Nothing came of it. I went down to the police headquarters. I filed a complaint and all of that stuff. They kept me there for quite some time. In the end, nothing came of it. And that's just a routine example of the ways in which people suffer these indignities. And then when you say it is true that people inordinately are being subjected to extrajudicial behavior on the part of police officers, that it is a crisis. The senator from South Carolina, I'm blocking on his name now, had said he was pulled over how many times? It was not unusual. And this is not a crisis. This is how societies, the Germans could tell you something about that. Fascism is propagated and carefully nurtured. You have no rights. So, my friends, we have to do some thinking about these things. And we have to learn how to distinguish what is an issue and what is not. Well, they said so and so and so and so. Okay, so what? That's what they said. But if, in fact, we have as a standard that everything they say can be tested in a court of law, then it doesn't matter what people say at the beginning, does it? The truth will be known. But look how much energy is poured into not allowing the truth to be known. We don't want to hear it. We have a system. We're going to put you through it. We'll get the results that we want. And we move on. They make you look like you're a nut. They make you look like you're radical, quote unquote. And you're radical because you want things to move right. You do not want police officers coming into your community with the attitude of a marauder. And in fact, that's what this police officer said. I'm going to kill that nigger. That's what he said. It was recorded. And still they say this was not in any way an indication of his intention to kill. So sometimes you wonder, is it a way of encouraging people to just flare up and do the things we see sometimes that they're doing? Breaking glass windows and bashing car windshields and this kind of stuff. And these are the younger people who look at the older people, the conduct of the older people, and they can't understand. Don't you see what you're doing? When you don't stand up, you are giving permission for this system to turn up the heat, to turn up the flame of oppression. Don't you see that? Don't you see how you are hurting us when you don't stand up for our rights? And they're your rights too. We have to pursue vigorously discourse among ourselves. Not with, you know, the intention of wagging the finger of blame anywhere, but with the intention of trying to convey to people the dire consequences that confront us all when we behave with each other like this and give the system permission to mistreat us. Because they will. And whether, as we saw this week, whether it's your grandmother in a nursing home dying of heat. I mean, I can't imagine this thing. Whether it's your children receiving a rotten education, whether it is the quality of health care available to you by reason of your skin color or where you live. We've got to tackle this and bring it straight out in the open and embarrass this country into doing something. I believe that a lot of this goes on because, in fact, they want to encourage a confrontation so that there is justification, simplistic, but justification for doing some of these evil things, to continue doing these evil things. So keep that in mind when you think of these people still suffering in Texas, still suffering all over Florida and the Caribbean and wherever they are. It isn't that there aren't solutions. It is that whatever solutions there are, somebody has decided long ago those solutions are not for them. Think about that. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks so much for allowing me to talk this long. I didn't intend to take the whole hour. As you know, I like hearing your voices as well. But tomorrow I want to encourage you to tune in. Some very important revelations tomorrow. And you'll be glad to hear the program, and I want you to share the program as well. And, of course, keep supporting PRN, a station that gives you what no other station does, which is really solid information, and it gives you a platform to express your views. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Molotovs and, oh, I wrote it down. Vincent Emanuele's program is coming up next. You want to Meditations and Molotovs. Thank you. Meditations and Molotovs coming up next. You'll want to stay tuned for that, and we'll see each other tomorrow if everything goes well. Bye-bye.